Here we are in the Congressional Corner with Representative Paul Tonko, a Democrat from New York's 20th District, in office since 2009, and he is one of my favorite people in the whole world. Welcome, Sir Paul.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the comment, and it's great to be with you.
So let's talk a little bit about the New York primary, and you support, as I understand it, Hochul and Delgado. Is that correct?
I do. I think that, having served with both of them, I see their leadership potential, their ability to compete effectively out there for the voters' support and trust. And, I think that in her short term as governor, stepping up with the resignation, following the resignation of Governor Cuomo, she has responded well and, had worked with her quite closely when she served in the House.
I want to talk to you a little bit about where your support goes. Does it go to them because you really think they're the better people, or does it go to them because you think they're going to win?
I think it's because they're the best choices on the ballot, and they're very good choices. I think that, with Kathy's service as lieutenant governor, I think she made it her goal to get to all the communities and to really take the pulse of people, and got to understand some of the urban culture, which I think is important in the metro New York area to be able to lead the state effectively, and certainly brings a voice for upstate, which I think is important because just as there are two economies in the country right now, I think there's also two economies within the state. And for her identification with those communities that struggle, those households that struggle, that's important. And I think, Representative Delgado showed that he can win as a man of color in a primarily white district. And again, his background, his academics are, a true testimony to a rise for a young man from Schenectady. So I think that they'll bring combined great leadership to the state of New York.
Well, Paul Tonko, do you think Delgado made a mistake in running for lieutenant governor?
Time will determine that. I think he's a strong choice. I think that obviously it puts a challenge out there to those of us in the House of Representatives that want to maintain Democratic majority outcomes. So,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but how do you do that? Do you go out there and, look under rocks for people to run for that office?
I don't think we have to look very far because there was, as you might recall, many people in the primary when Antonio Delgado won the Democratic nomination for that seat. So there were many people still very interested, very capable people. And, I think it just presented a challenge because it's one less incumbent, well-known, name established, record established, that, served yet as another test to us as a Democratic Party. But, I see this election coming in November that isn't really going to be that traditional wave election that people were forecasting. I think there are strengths and challenges for both sides. And with the latest Supreme Court decisions, you have a situation now where I don't see a wave election, but I see it primarily as district by district by district. So it's going to rely on strong campaigns by all of us as incumbents and newcomers to do our best to win that so as to the cumulative effect be the majority to then again serves in the House.
So Paul Tonko, tell me, do you have any trepidations about all of this? Politicians often worry about control. You and I have talked so many times over the years in which, you have not left yourself open for post-election criticism because you've always talked about how these are elections. What do you think this time?
Well, I think it's, I think clearly right now the message and the news of the Supreme Court decisions and the hint of greater things, greater in their opinion, more decisions coming, really reminds us that elections have consequences. and that, you know.
In other words, if you elect a Republican right-wing president and he appoints Supreme Court judges, you're going to have a problem.
And beyond that, with the separation of powers, the legislative branch now becomes very important because there are many, and I agree with the sentiment, that many believe that the Supreme Court is acting against the wishes of the great majority of Americans.
Clearly.
And so elections have consequences. So in order to combat, when it comes to Roe v. Wade, you know, the Democratic majority moved to codify that whole situation and passed it on to the United States Senate. So the ball will rest in our court, I think. In many ways, and with the executive, with the president. And so I think this year there will be an added energy and a rationale, a reason to get out there and make the election of 2022 be all the more meaningful.
Has that changed? I mean, based on the headlines and political decisions?
I think so. You know, you have so many drastic things happening right now, and people are just seeing, I think, the Supreme Court as politicians in black robes,
mm-hmm.
and that they're doing this in a partisan way, responding to those who brought them to the bench rather than to the need and the wishes and the most progressive outcome for the country.
So how do we change that? Do we increase the size of the court? Do we court pack? What do we do?
Yeah, I'm not so certain yet what approach to follow, but I do think it's going to trigger reforms, whether it's in terms of limiting the tenure on the court or having stronger ethics reforms that will come through, or adding seats for justices to the Supreme Court. But I think it will inspire a lot of debate and perhaps actions for reform.
To which end? I mean, this Senate is not about to make major changes in the Supreme Court.
Well, I hear you. But, you know, when you look at the Senate and the votes that the senators carried in their election, and you do the same thing in the House, the calculus is that the great majority of Americans elected a Democratic majority in each House. Mm-hmm. And they're getting these very far right-wing conservative approaches, undoing decades of precedents and policy. And I think that is going to trigger a great movement in the country to elect people that will make a difference here and change the pattern of late that is so counter to the thinking of Americans.
Let's talk about guns for a minute. The bipartisan Senate gun package that was approved by the House. What do you make of it?
I think it's a move in the right direction. It's a step forward, so I voted for it. But I think there's a lot of unfinished business that needs to be taken care of in that regard. And while it was bipartisan and bicameral, it still had a lot of people who were voting against it in our House. Very few people from the Republican side voted for the gun safety reform. And in the Senate, I think they were able to garner 15 Republicans. So more work needed to be done. And I hope that this inspires us to continue the bipartisan efforts in both houses. I hope it's not a situation where we wring our hands and say, okay, we've done our thing for gun safety. Let's give it 10 or 20 years to see how it impacts, because we don't need more carnage in the classroom of single-digit age children being wiped out by machine gun type of equipment. Or people gunned down in houses of worship or in a grocery store. So much more work to be done, but a step in the right direction.
Congressman Paul Tonko, Democrat of New York's 20th District. Paul, it's always a delight to have you here and come into the studio. And I look you in the eye and I say, keep going.
Thank you, sir. And it's always a pleasure to be with you.